Right now, we see some worrying signs that the escalation of violence, not only on the police side, but also on the protester side.
Could China be planning to cross into Hong Kong to stop the continuing protests there? We'll examine that. This is Thursday, the 15th of August, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, Pakistan's leader says India is planning a military attack against his country. Donald Trump's son defends the Trump business plans in Indonesia. All that and more on today's VOA Asia. The United States says it is deeply concerned by reports of Chinese paramilitary movement along the border with Hong Kong, the Chinese territory that has seen 10 consecutive weeks of pro-democracy demonstrations. A written statement from the U.S. State Department read, "We encourage China and all parties in Hong Kong to pursue a solution that respects the liberty of Hong Kongers and Hong Kong's high degree of autonomy as enshrined in the Sino-British Joint Declaration." As protests have escalated in recent days, China's state-run media have shown videos of security forces gathering across the border in mainland China. Chinese police have also been accused of infiltrating the protest in an effort to stir up trouble. U.S. President Donald Trump said Tuesday on Twitter, "Our intelligence has informed us that the Chinese government is moving troops to the border with Hong Kong. Everyone should be calm and safe." In comments to reporters Tuesday, Trump, who last week took a hands-off stance on the protest, said the Hong Kong situation is a very tough situation, very tough. Went on to say, "We'll see what happens, but I'm sure it will work out." He expressed the hope that no one would get hurt and for liberty, he said. There have been fierce clashes between demonstrators and police on Hong Kong streets. Violence also erupted at the international airport late Tuesday as riot police clashed with pro-democracy demonstrators who had taken over the airport for two consecutive days. I spoke about the protest with Mun Kee Tam. He is director of Amnesty International's Hong Kong office. He told me that the situation became violent last Sunday.
The ugly scenes in last Sunday becomes a turning point. We saw that police brutality escalate to another level. I mean, the disproportionality of their use of weapons, and also we saw in some reports and some photos and live streams that some police seems to be loss of their own control. I think it is dangerous that the police neglected the necessity, the proportionality and legality of their use of force, and they have to restrain themselves from now onwards. Otherwise, the situation will be escalating, will keep escalating, and tensions will be further built up between the protesters and also the police. And I think to ease the situation is not as difficult as we think. On the other side, I think it is all about Carrie Lam. If she is a responsible leader, she has to step out to answer, to face directly the demands of the protesters, which has been very consistent and persistent since early June. That includes, as I said, the withdrawal of the bill and also the setup of the Independent Investigation Committee, and also about to release people being arrested and etc.
Do you think Beijing, the government, is losing face over this and might react in a way that they would either invade or send troops into Hong Kong?
Well, we can see that in the media briefings of the Chinese authorities, officials, they try to use vague charges, for example, from foreign influences to now terrorism, to try to frame the protesters as being not contributing to Hong Kong society.
Would international pressure bring any difference? Is that what Amnesty International is looking for pressure, especially against the police use of what is considered violence?
I think from Amnesty perspective, as an international non-government organization, we have been first monitoring the police use of force in various places and countries. Hong Kong is not the only place that we have been monitoring the situation, but also like the United States, Egypt, Turkey, Russia, and etc. So we have been publishing report along these lines to answer or to research on the recent trend of the use of police force all around the world. And we have been, there are worrying signs that the police use of force become more excessive and also the necessity and legality becomes more questionable than before. So on the other hand, in particular to the withdrawal of the bill, we are, from a human rights perspective, our concerns over the present extradition bill has been always the same, which is that removing the barrier between the judiciary system of Hong Kong and China. This is dangerous because it will affect the one country, two system, and also affect the image of both the Beijing and Hong Kong government in terms of whether they are committed to deliver this promise of one country, two system.
What is the scenario you would like to see as far as the Hong Kong government is concerned?
I think right now we see some worrying signs that the escalation of violence, not only on the police side, but also on the protester side. I think Carrie Lam is shameful for Carrie Lam to take advantage of the tension and the clashes between both sides. She has to step out. She has to take her responsibility as the chief executive of Hong Kong to answer the calls of the protesters, to answer the calls of the movement, and to answer the call of Amnesty, in particular, on the withdrawal of the bill officially and also to set up independent investigation on police brutality scenes.
Mankay Tam, director of Amnesty International's Hong Kong office, speaking with us via Skype. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. Commerce Chief Wilbur Ross said Wednesday that the postponement of a new 10% tariff on Chinese-manufactured consumer products was not a concession to Beijing, but rather to help U.S. consumers during this year's Christmas shopping season. Malaysian authorities began the examination on the body of a Franco-Irish teenager, Nora Quarren, on Wednesday, with a lawyer for her family saying that the girl's parents were distraught. Floods and landslides from 2 weeks of heavy monsoon rains have killed more than 270 people in India this month, displaced a million and inundated thousands of homes across six states. Expanded coverage of these stories and more. Find them on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan warned Wednesday that rival India is planning a major cross-border military attack to divert world attention from its recent crippling crackdown in its part of the disputed Kashmir region. He issued the warning Wednesday in a nationally televised address. VOA's Ayaz Gul is in Islamabad, and he joins us now. Ayaz, what is happening here? Is this just a buildup of tension on both sides now?
Yes, that is clearly the situation that we are seeing. Tensions are continuously escalating. And with this new statement that Prime Minister Imran Khan gave today, clearly indicates that Pakistan, the chief executive of the country, is making this kind of a statement. It means that they might have witnessed some mobilization of troops on the Indian side of Kashmir. The crux of Prime Minister Imran Khan's speech was that because it has been almost 2 weeks that the Indian authorities have, imposed this unprecedented security clampdown in Kashmir, And what he said in his speech, that he was worried that once these restrictions are eased, everybody would be keen to find out what was the purpose of this kind of a situation where there's a complete communication blackout, there's curfew, and people were not allowed to go and offer prayers on this annual festival of Eid 2 days ago. So I think the attempt that Prime Minister Imran Khan made was to try to draw international attention to this situation that he said could be sort of an ethnic cleansing and genocide of the Kashmiri people that India might have been conducting in order to impose its unilateral revocation of the Kashmir autonomy.
What has been the international reaction so far to the situation?
When this crisis began on August 5th, when India announced that it was revoking Kashmir's autonomy, there was little reaction from international powers other than China, which is a strong ally of Pakistan. But in the last 24 hours, Pakistani officials say that they have received assurances from members of the UN Security Council, and that is why on Tuesday, Pakistan formally requested the president of the UN Security Council to convene an urgent meeting to discuss whatever is happening in Indian Kashmir. And Pakistan has said that China is going to provide all kind of support to this resolution that Pakistan wants to be tabled at the Security Council. So that is one thing that we hear from Pakistanis, that they are confident that they will be receiving more support. But obviously, it is very significant that we haven't heard any new statements from particularly the United States, Russia, and other big nations in support of Pakistan's stance, whereas India continues to tell its audience and other countries that whatever it is doing is an internal matter, and that it is trying to implement these new measures in Kashmir to bring prosperity and development to the region that has been hampered because of years of insurgency in that part of India.
And what about the people who live in that area, in the Kashmir area? What is their life like now? What are they saying, or can no information come out of there?
Yes, that's a good question, because, you know, a little bit of images and videos that have emerged out of the Indian Kashmir have shown, scenes that are quite worrying, because there have been instances where video footages have shown that Indian security forces have been directly firing at the protesting crowds, and, you know, there have been demonstrations. But then in the last 3-4 days, it has been strictly stopped. You know, any video footages or any images out of Kashmir, we have not seen. Even Indian media now has started, carefully. Indian media has been trying to support whatever Prime Minister Narendra Modi has done to Kashmir. But now we see that there have been critical voices in India, especially in mainstream media, that they're worried that why, if India was prepared to implement these new measures in Kashmir, then why is it so that for almost 11 days there have been a strict security clampdown and no information has been coming out of the region? So these are the things which are now even facing criticism in India, and Prime Minister Modi's government is obviously still, you know, defending it and telling its own audience that no, everything is fine. But as you said, what is the situation? Really, we don't know. Neither international media nor Indian media have been able to really present the real picture of Kashmir as of today.
VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad. Happening now in Asia, Nepal must make training and experience in high-altitude climbing mandatory for all climbers on Mount Everest and other high peaks. That according to a government panel on Wednesday, following the deadliest climbing season in 4 years. 11 climbers were killed or went missing on the 8,850-meter mountain in May. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Donald Trump Jr. promoted two Trump-branded resorts in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta on Tuesday and defended against allegations that the Trump Organization's business global empire continues to create conflicts of interest for his father's administration. White House correspondent Patsy Wadakuswara has this story.
It may not look like much now, but Donald Trump Jr. is touting the two Trump residences in Indonesia as dream projects.
I'm very excited to be here to see these two very different, very distinct projects really start coming together simultaneously.
Trump Jr. was in Jakarta Tuesday to promote the planned luxury homes in Lido, West Java, and Bali. The projects are developed by MNC Land, owned by Hari Tanu Sudibyo, business tycoon and founder of right-wing Indonesian Unity Party Perindo, who calls President Trump his friend. Tanu Sudibyo and his wife Liliana were VIP guests at Trump's inauguration. The Trump family's global business dealings have raised concerns over potential violations of the Emoluments Clause, a law that prohibits government officials from receiving foreign gifts. The administration maintains they are not in violation as long as there is no specific quid pro quo. But some analysts say that America's founders meant for the clause to be broader.
What the founders were trying to avoid is not only that, but also Donald Trump thinking, Indonesia, I like Indonesia because I've done business there. I should be thoughtful about Indonesian interests when I'm formulating my policy.
Trump Jr. dismissed the allegations, in his word, as asinine.
I'd like to shut that nonsense down once and for all right here.
Upon winning the presidency, Trump refused to divest, but promised that the Trump Organization would not sign any new foreign deals while he was in office. But new foreign deals are not easy to define. MNC has hired construction firm POSCO ENC, partly owned by the Saudi and South Korean governments, to develop Lido City, which will include a Trump golf course and hotel. In May, MNC announced it hired a Chinese construction company to build a theme park in Lido City with potential Chinese financing.
That was done by my team, but finally we dropped it. So the theme park is nothing to do with the Trump Organization. I have to make it very clear.
Trump Jr.'s visit comes amid Indonesian officials' concerns about being targeted by Trump's protectionist policies as trade tensions between the U.S. and China continues. In 2018, the Southeast Asian nation had an $8.3 billion trade surplus. Patsy Wadakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Coming your way, concerns over one of Mongolia's most popular sporting events. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Your requests, your dedications, and interviews and performances by your favorite music superstars. It's Border Crossings. This is Larry London. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 15 hours Universal Time on VOA or online at voanews.com. You've got control. Border Crossings, weekdays at 15 hours Universal Time at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Thousands of South Koreans protested outside Japan's embassy in Seoul on Wednesday. City officials unveiled a new memorial to wartime comfort women at the center of a row over the two countries' shared history. Day of Remembrance for Women Forced to Work in Japan's Wartime Military Brothels comes amid renewed tensions over political and economic disputes. U.S. and European stock markets plunged sharply Wednesday as key economic indicators signaled the possibility of a global recession in the next year. Key indexes in New York fell more than 2%, while markets in Europe sustained similar losses. Analysts pointed to weak German and Chinese economic data as warning signs of a possible world economic slowdown, but most importantly to a so-called yield curve inversion for interest rates on 2- and 10-year U.S. Treasury notes. President Donald Trump has touted a robust U.S. economy as a key reason voters should re-elect him in 2020. Tuesday, the U.S. president attacked China's trade and financial policies. More from VOA's Lavis Ahok.
Trump took several jabs at China on Tuesday.
China made themselves. They did a good job. But they ripped off our country for years. And with our money and World Trade Organization backing, and then they took advantage of the rules of the World Trade Organization. And I'm being nice when I say took advantage.
Trump also accused China of manipulating its currency, which Beijing denies. Some analysts support China's claim.
Objectively speaking, China hasn't manipulated the exchange rate. As the International Monetary Fund pointed out in its recent year's reports, the Chinese yuan exchange rate is consistent with China's economy. So it's completely wrong that U.S. President Donald Trump says China increases its competitiveness by devaluing the yuan.
Trump said the United States has made billions of dollars by imposing tariffs on Chinese imports. But on Tuesday, he announced his decision to delay additional tariffs on Chinese goods until mid-December to protect American consumers. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia, U.S. officials say the Chinese government has denied requests for two U.S. Navy ships to make port visits to Hong Kong amid civil unrest there. A spokesman for the U.S. Pacific Fleet said Tuesday the amphibious transport dock ship Green Bay had been scheduled to visit Hong Kong August 17th, and the guided missile cruiser Lake Erie was scheduled to visit in September. This is VOA News. Mongolia's most famous horse festival is a celebrated event across the country, but in the background, rights groups are concerned about the rise of performance-enhancing drugs, harsh handling of horses, and lax enforcement of safety protections for child jockeys. More than 10,000 children participate in nearly 400 races nationwide in Mongolia, and according to Mongolia's National Traumatology and Orthopedics Research, an average of 600 child jockeys are thrown from their horse. In 2017, 169 of them were killed. Libby Hogan has this report from the Middle Gobi Desert of Mongolia.
Most 7-year-old children might enjoy summer holidays playing games, but not Namun. Every morning she's up early saddling her horse for training. Growing up on the edge of the Gobi Desert in a nomadic family, Namun must work as a jockey, riding in Mongolia's biggest horse racing event, the Nadam.
When I was 5, I started to ride horses and I have been racing now for 4 years. My father trains the horses and I am the jockey to race them.
Mongolian courts have banned child riders from racing in winter and spring races in response to the high number of deaths and injuries recorded each year. But most horse racing families continue to swing child jockeys back up into the saddle despite the new regulations introduced in 2016.
When the kids are jockeys, it is good for their health, their exercise. It is a national tradition. Namun didn't have any accidents so far, but when she races, I always worry.
If galloping for 25 kilometers isn't dangerous enough, the growing use of performance-enhancing drugs for racehorses is also prompting outrage. Rights groups have slammed horse trainers for putting children's lives even more at risk. Retired events organizers are worried the traditional Nadam festival is now turning into a business, pushing horses and child jockeys to the limits.
I've trained racing horses since the 1970s. We used to start early with preparation, giving them extra feed to make them strong. Now the rules aren't strict and everything is becoming easier and about the prize money.
With regulations poorly enforced and perpetrators of child fatalities rarely punished, the fate of improving horse racing standards are slim. For Namun, she says she will continue racing as it makes her family happy.
My family is so glad when I race, especially my brother. When I win, my brother is so glad and proud of me.
Libby Hogan for Voice of America News, Sakan Uvu Village, Gobi Desert, Mongolia.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zina Bell Rockman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.